powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
The Mariners get their first sweep of the season. And Bump, yesterday you and I were live from T-Mobile, and we started the show by having all these great things to say about their first series win. It was a wonderful game. And one of them was, you know what, we got to give this team credit for bringing back Mitch in the offseason. Today, we're starting the show by giving them credit for something else, hanging on to Bryce Miller. Mm. You mentioned something before the show started that I completely agreed with, and it's a good thing we're starting talking about pitching. What did you say?
Yeah, I was watching the game, and you know, we've been so focused on the offense. I'm taking these notes, and I go, Okay, Julio, extra base hit, I'm feeling that. Cal doing his thing, France being disciplined at the plate. End of the game goes by, and I go, hold on, that was a one-hitter?
Wait.
I didn't realize it was a one-hitter because once you saw Ellie De La Cruz go yard, Subconsciously I'm thinking, okay, there has to be a few hits out there. But Miller was consistent, man. And I heard him say something after the game that was funny to me. It was like, last year, if one pitch wasn't working, I wasn't confident enough to rely on my secondary pitches. And I go, well, what pitch wasn't working for you, son? Because you went six innings, had one hit, only one earned run on that bomb in seven Ks. So for him to put that performance together and still have kind of a critique about himself saying that his primary pitch wasn't working and he adjusted, it's fun to hear. But yeah, I and Stace, you got me on the scorebook type deal. I'm
yours
taking the notes.
Yours is so neat. Can I just tell people? So I use the Bob Carpenter scorebook. Curtis uses the Bob Carpenter scorebook, and I like writing it down.
Brick.
There's something, it's huge. There's something really satisfying about doing it. But Bump uses an app on your iPad. I have never in my life been able to, with a stylus on an iPad, make anything look as neat and organized as you do for this scorebook. And I was so mad because you know how I value penmanship.
I appreciate that. Yeah. It means a lot coming from you.
Thank you.
Because your penmanship is on point.
I'm telling you that Bump's electronic scorebook is impeccable. Let's stick with Bryce Miller. Here's what he had to say about his approach, lefties versus righties, after the game.
My approach is a lot different, lefties and righties. I still haven't, like, today I didn't feel very, very good coming into today, and I felt like today was one of those days that I didn't have my best stuff. It took me three or four innings to stop pulling everything, but as the game went on, I think it got better.
Now again, talked about coming into the game, maybe didn't have his best stuff. That Ellie De La Cruz home run that you talked about happened in the top of the second, give Cincinnati a very brief lead, one that they didn't hang on to. But, man, give yourself a little more credit here. One hit allowed, struck out seven through six. And when I mentioned, hey, we got to give this team credit like we did yesterday, with each day where we critique something and we say, oh, I wish you would have gone for more offense in the offseason, I still would have loved to see it. But I have to also do a tip of the cap to the fact that at the risk of making the offense not as great as it could be, they hung on to more of their arms. They did not trade Bryce. They did not trade Brian Wu. We haven't seen Wu yet to start the season, but Bump, it is clear it was the right decision to keep your pitching staff as whole as possible.
Yeah, that was the move. I mean, they kept the strongest part of their team strong. They said, we're not getting rid of anybody. We're keeping this rotation going. We believe in these guys, and it's paying off for them, man. And Miller's a young guy, man. He's still learning about himself, about his pitches, how to get out of trouble, where to locate these pitches, and he's looking great. The development, and again, this is a prime example of the Mariners doing what they do best, develop these pitchers. And another thing, big ups to Bryce Miller with his chain. The chain he was wearing last night. On point, son. I feel you. I didn't know you had that in him, but he's from Texas, so you know you got the little swag going.
Just a little bit of it.
But yeah, it was a dominant performance. And big ups to the bullpen as well. I mean, they came in and held it down. I think the last couple times we saw the bullpen enter the game, it's been a bit shaky. Spire let a bomb go the other day. Munoz has had his ups and downs during the season so far when it comes to securing the bag. But no, this was a complete win. We saw a little bit of everything. They hit for power, extra bases, also was disciplined at the plate. The pitching was on point. They needed this. Remember I told you I had my dad voice on, right? Like, do it again. So now the dad voice is, I bring my son to the side. I go, I'm proud of you, man. I'm proud of you. Way to get the job done.
You made me and your mother very proud today. Scott Service saying they definitely needed the sweep, not just for the team, but how about for the fans that were understandably getting a little concerned to start the season?
Yeah, it gives us a little momentum and it calms the masses, so to speak, and that's okay. You know, we have high expectations for this team. The players have high expectations for themselves. I think the difference with this club is their ability to recognize where they're at and being able to handle the truth. And when you're not going very well, sometimes you need to tell them the truth. Some teams will fold and not feel good about it. Our guys just stand up and say, yeah, we're not very good right now. How are we going to get better? And not afraid to make some adjustments. To credit to the players, it is about them. I believe in this group. I said it Sunday after we lost a tough game. I just believe in the makeup of this crew, and certainly we have plenty of talent.
I wish I could have been a fly on the wall for any team meetings that they had or any moments of honesty and bluntness that players had with themselves and with other players in team meetings to be like, we're not good and here's what's bad. And I think Service is right. I don't think he's just saying this because it's his guys and he believes in them. I don't think every player can take criticism, and I don't think every team can take criticism.
Criticism is tough, especially when you're dealing with a young team. Now, you got some veteran leadership out here, but for the most part, the guys you're depending on are younger. They're not extremely young, but a younger team. And sometimes people get defensive when you criticize them. And in athletics, you got your coaches criticizing you, your teammates criticizing you, and then you got people like us on the mic criticizing everything that you do. The important part is to block out the noise and listen to the voices that are important to you. So, I would love to be in that room and see what Mitch Haniger had to say, or hear what he had to say, hear what Cal Raleigh had to say. And even a guy like Julio, we know that he's more of a, or we've heard he's more of a lead by example type of guy, but I'm sure he had a voice in this as well. Who I'm most relieved for now, everything's short term because they got the Cubs next. Who they got next?
The Rockies.
And then
Texas.
At the Rockies. So, you got to enjoy this sweep. Right? Enjoy the sweep. Thank your pitching staff. Defense was better. The bats were better. But keep building on this momentum. But I'm happy for Scott Service. You can hear it in his voice. My man is relieved. Yeah. Like, goodness gracious, man. All right, this is what we can be when everything is on point. This is who we want to be. This is who we thought we would be. So I'm happy for the players because they needed to perform for themselves. Because at some point, when you're not executing the way that you want to, there's some doubt that creeps in. They are professionals, so they deal with that a bit better than most athletes. But for Scott Service, man, because, goodness gracious, man, people have been on his head.
People want anyone's head anytime anyone's struggling. They're like, what's Scott not doing? In fact, let's listen to a little bit more from Scott. This is him talking about what's been driving this and the fact that they're playing cleaner baseball.
We are driven by our pitching staff and playing really good defense. And I think that's the thing that stood out for me here over the last probably week or so. We have played much cleaner baseball. I mean, starting, Julio's game last night was phenomenal in center field. Urias, Rojas at third base have done a really nice job picking things up there, and it really helps out your pitching when you're making those plays. And we weren't doing that the first 10 days of the season, and now we are. And our starters are getting a little bit deeper in the game, and everything just kind of rolls for us because of it.
This is a team that will not be elite defensively this season. We have heard that from many an analyst, and I don't think they're wrong. I don't think they're being harsh. It was something that they sacrificed in the offseason. You also want to go into a season knowing that your weakness isn't going to pop up every single game. And that's what it felt like early in the season for the Mariners. It's like, hey, I get we're not going to be great defensively, but do we need an error or some kind of issue every single time? Now what you're seeing is like, if you see an error from this defense, don't think everything has fallen apart. That's kind of who they were expected to be. But being able to put together a clean game, a series, or two clean games in a row really helps.
Yeah, it does. And you could look at, I think their fielding percentage is top of the league, right? Top 10 or something like that, last time that I checked. But when you just watch the game and you look at how clean a game can be, that's what I look at defensively. A guy could make a play, throw on a first base, but it wasn't as clean as you want it to be. Therefore, you think it looks a bit shaky. A guy can make a play in the outfield, but he's not in position. He's not behind the ball. He doesn't look comfortable catching a rock. And you look at it and you go, that's not clean enough. That's what I'm looking for when it comes to defense. Just be clean. Even if you make a great play at shortstop and you throw it to first, but you don't make the play, you don't get the out, it's still clean. Just be fundamentally sound. And they're turning the corner when it comes to that. Again, man, this sweep was needed. It was necessary for us, for them, for all involved when it comes to supporting these Mariners. So there's a way you want to win, too. If they won this game and it looked sloppy, I think we'd take the win, but we'd have a bit more concerns about, all right, well, they got away with one. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like they got away with one. They won this ball game.
Yeah, it felt like they won it the way that they thought they could win so many games, which is play clean enough defense, get some good offense going and have a great pitching performance. getting 10 hits in a game against Cincinnati was really fun, but that's not really the team we imagined they would be. So you don't want to, you can't let yourself think that that's going to be happening a lot, that they're going to be this right. offensive powerhouse. This kind of game, they can do this when mm-hmm. they're on their P's and Q's. You opened the show by mentioning that you were so focused on the offense that you didn't really realize it was just a one hitter until it was done, until it was late. And I felt the exact same way. That doesn't mean we're not going to talk about the offense, because right. you were right to track it. It has been a question, so let's get to it. One more cut from service here, talking about how Julio's really freed himself.
Well, I think he's freeing himself up. He's not thinking about his mechanics. He's up there, and it looks like he can hit it. He can hit it. Julio is always going to be an aggressive player, and he's going to, you know, drive you crazy on certain days. Why would he swing at that pitch? Why would he do that? That's Julio. That's what makes him special. He's got unbelievable talent, and when you're that talented, sometimes you think you can hit every pitch. But he's going to stay aggressive. I think the defensive game he threw out there last night does a lot for a player. You're able to realize your ability to impact the game in other ways, not just with the bat, goes a long way. You know, you see guys make great defensive plays or do things, and it kind of like frees them up at the plate. I think that's what we saw today, and we need to continue. We're going to a great place to hit in Colorado, and hopefully we can keep Julio in a good spot, because I'd love to see him go off there.
Now, Mitch Haniger is on an 8-game hit streak. Julio quietly picking things up, though, Bump, and you have been tracking this as well. But, I mean, over the last, well, essentially over this series, he's also on a little mini hit streak here with two in each of his last two and then one in the series opener. What have you seen from his game? And then what did you like from the offense as a whole?
His game, just being patient. Being patient and still making good contact. He grounded out his first at bat, but then he comes back his second at bat. He got an extra base hit. Your next two at bats, you strike out your next two at bats, but then you come back and you get another extra base hit. It's about him just being patient. He knows how these guys are going to pitch them. The good players understand their weaknesses and try their best to either get better at it or control the risks that they take. And the more I watch Julio, the more I'm starting to feel that. It's funny to hear Service talk about how him getting it going defensively can help him offensively. And I started thinking about, okay, in basketball, right? I was never the sharp shooter in basketball, right? How can I help my team play really good defense, run the offense? Mm-hmm. In football, when I was with the Seahawks, I wasn't the first, second, or third option. How can I help this team? All right, man, be a good blocker.
Special teamer.
Secure the punt, you know? So it's funny to hear, or it's just intriguing to hear Scott Service talk about how that can get him going. And as he's talking about it, I hear it. Because when Julio does, or I see it, when Julio does make a play in the outfield, feel his chest gets a bit bigger.
Yeah.
He's hyped up running to the dugout. The crowd is getting going. The team is rallying around him. So yeah, I think that was huge to Julio being where he is right now. Now, we knew he was going to get here. We felt he was going to get here, but sometimes it takes something just to push you in the right direction. And that's what I'm seeing out of Julio, man. Again, long season. So we knew eventually we were going to see this type of production.
Yeah.
Still waiting on a bomb, though. Still waiting on a bomb. Still something to do. And I like that that's still out there, because now there's something for us to anticipate, right? We're going to get excited when Julio hits his first bomb.
Yeah, it's interesting you talking about the idea of, like, even as a former player yourself, like, doing one thing right really helps boost your confidence in other areas. And I think there's this thing that I do as someone who's never played, which is I think, like, well, he's got all the tools. Why isn't this coming together? And it seems so obvious that the answer would be because he's human, and because we're all human, and because when I'm not confident and I'm not feeling my best, I don't do my best work. Why would that not also apply to someone who has accomplished more, whose ego is bigger than mine? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter, mm-hmm. because he's still a human. He's 23 years old.
Youngster.
If he feels like he's not performing, he's letting his team down, he's going to be trying so much harder. And you can see it in those swing decisions, too. Mm-hmm. You make a great catch. You got the no-fly zone being right. thrown up by people in the outfield. All of a sudden, you're thinking, okay, I'm doing my job today.
Yeah, you're...
You relax a little at the plate.
You're still contributing, and that's what you want to feel like. When you feel like you're not contributing to the group project, man, it's a lonely feeling, unless you're just a DNF student and you don't care. And Julio is not that, man. So good to see Julio do his thing. Also want to give some props to Kyle Raleigh, right? He goes yard, but then he's patient at the plate again and gets walked two times. Ty Franz being patient at the plate. He K's his first time around, then he walks three times. Get on base. Now, they did leave a bunch of guys on base, right? But again, a step in the right direction, not forcing the issue, being patient, getting on base, and hopefully allowing your compadres to pick you up. And then big ups to Rojas, man, coming off the bench.
Mm-hmm.
Bam. Yard. This it was refreshing to see that type of win. Good job, son. I'm proud of you.
All right, you're going to have an off day today as they get ready for a long road trip. Tomorrow, you're going to have a 5:40 p.m. first pitch, opening a series against the Rockies. I will never say a series is winnable. Because this is a team that has struggled to start the season. And even though the Rockies are a little banged up and are not an exceptional team, you never know what's going to happen. I didn't think the Red Sox pitchers would come in and dominate. But lo and behold, there is an opportunity here against Colorado. Also, because there's no game tonight, you have extra innings hosted by Curtis Rogers. Curtis, what do you have coming up tonight at 7?
At 7 to 9, we have got Mike Lefko at 7:15, our top secret special guest. And then Paul Holden, host of Locked On Rockies, and also he's a producer on our FM station, 97.3. So he'll stop by to preview the Rockies. He's a huge Rockies fan.
I was going to say, how is one of our Seattle producers the host of Locked On Rockies? Do people in Colorado know that he's a plant?
Yeah. I mean, they're about to find out.
That's about to expose him in a really uncomfortable way.
Look, there is no one on earth, and I feel very confident in saying this, that knows more about Rockies baseball than Paul Holden, who's out in our newsroom.
I need
right
to
now.
Know.
He wears a Rockies hat every day.
I know that Denver is not far. Right? It's
right.
A state over or so. I'm not sure about geography. It's somewhere near us. It's a stone's throw away.
It's a time zone
away. I'm also wondering how we got the biggest Rockies fan on the planet in our building.
Am I going to use it to my advantage tonight?
Absolutely. So tune in for that preview.
That's what we call smart producing.
7 to 9 p.m. with Extra Innings, hosted by Curtis Rogers. Let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, Seattle Times' Jeff Baker says tonight will probably be the final Kraken broadcast on Root Sports. What's the real headline?
Which local network is going to have to give up primetime programming for them? Now, this isn't even like a joke or anything. It's a real question that pops up after this. You go from Root Sports, dedicated to Pacific Northwest sports, and you go on to maybe CBS, whatever kind of local contract you're getting. You have quite a few Kraken games. They're going to be in primetime spots.
In the fall,
where's that going to land?
Man, these guys ain't got a home right now. You know what? Kraken, I feel you. Washington State, we don't have a home, really. We just got a home. CW, baby, what's up?
That's true.
You know what I mean? Hey, Chicago. Chicago Network got us. But, yeah, this is sad because just last year, we were celebrating this team. There was Kraken fever. People were buying hats and sweaters. I mean, it was Kraken up in the Northwest. And now they don't have a home. But you're right. Someone's going to have to look at this team a network is and see the potential in this team. That's the tough part. Where is the potential? I mean, you got Matty Beniers. Mm-hmm. You also have Shane Wright. That's who you got to lean on to promote and say, look, we got something happening in the works. You got to be patient with us.
What to you is the biggest question for the Kraken? And I'll have my answer right now and then just kind of like moving forward.
Biggest question is your head coach going to be there?
Same.
Moving forward, can you acquire some all-star talent?
Oh my God, that was going to be mine. I was going to say right now, the biggest question centers around Dave Hakstol. Mm-hmm. Moving forward, the biggest question centers around Ron Francis.
Yep.
Yeah, we're going into year four. They've never had multiple All-Stars in one year. Like, come on, guys.
What is this, the 2019 Mariners?
Right?
Am I right?
Oh, no, Daniel Vogelbach. I will say, though, the potential good news about them moving to a local network is that it'll be available in more homes.
Yes.
The problem is that where are you going to find that network?
I'll tell you where it's not going.
It's not going on CBS.
Absolutely not.
8 p.m. on a Wednesday.
Stay off
Survivor. Let's go.
I had no idea what you guys were talking about.
I think that I have very seriously considered starting a Survivor podcast, asking Curtis to host the podcast with me. Uh-huh. However, there are so many good Survivor podcasts.
That's true.
That, who am I to step on
toes?
Oh, man.
Hey, go get it.
No.
It's a pretty saturated market right now.
It is. Yeah. And No Buffs through the Ringer as a Survivor podcast is so thorough that I'm like, I couldn't do it. I'm going to stay in my lane of thinking of podcasts centered around reality television.
Okay.
I'm not counting Survivor, which I count as competition television.
Right.
It's different.
It's a cousin.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, Caitlin Clark reportedly nearing an 8-figure shoe deal with Nike. What's the real headline?
But I thought she was taking a pay cut by turning pro.
That's what they'll tell you.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
We knew she was going to get her deals off the court, right? We knew she was going to get her money off the court. I think people were just so focused on that $73,000 and said, what's going on? A talent like Caitlin Clark She's going to get endorsements from Nike. She's already doing State Farm commercials. Who knows what else she's going to be doing? I think that's why she was comfortable not taking that $5 million from the big three, saying, I'm going to make my money elsewhere. Me and my boy got into a debate. He goes, she's got to take that money, go to the big three. I go, as a kid, did she dream of playing in the big three? Heck no.
Really,
she dreamed of playing in the WNBA. There's something to be said about that. She's accomplishing a goal. She's going to get her money. I think she will be one of the driving forces that increases salaries in the WNBA, especially if she comes out and balls. Guess who has seats to the Indiana Fever versus the Seattle Storm May 22nd?
My guy.
Your boy.
Let's go.
Taking my daughter, my sons, the wifey. It's going to be great. Again, the Caitlin Clark effect. I've never been to a WNBA game. I'll be there at Climate Pledge.
So I just want to add on, there's a really interesting interview that came out on ESPN Radio's Unsportsmanlike with UConn coach Gino Auriemma. I always mispronounce his name. Coach Gino.
Auriemma.
As an Italian, I'm really dropping the ball. But he talks about how the one-and-done rule has really ruined the men's game, but that there's already so much fever for it that, like, it doesn't matter. But he's like, the men's game is just completely transactional. One thing that's been able to grow the women's game to what we've seen so far is that you get to know players. And he says, look, what helped the women's game is people in Iowa grew up with Caitlin Clark. Like, they had her for five, she was fifth year, right? They had her for 5 years there. He said, people in Connecticut got to grow up with all of my players. There's something to be said for that. I think that one thing that is likely to keep women in college longer is those NIL deals seemingly will always seem to pay more. So while I am glad that Caitlin is going to the WNBA and finding other opportunities to make a ton of money, I low-key am grateful that there's also incentive for women to stay in NCAA.
I think on both sides, the men and women's game, NIL is going to incentivize these kids to stay longer. Therefore, they develop and you get a better product once they enter the NBA. Again, there's good angles to this as well.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, the Seahawks brought in Rashad Penny for a free agent visit. Yes, that Rashad Penny. That was on Wednesday. What's the real headline?
They say it's hard to quit a first round pick.
Hey, my man, you know, you guys put this in the show email. I don't know if we're going to talk about this or not, but what does that mean about Kenny McIntosh? That is crazy to me. Now, never hate on a man. You get your money, get a job here, Rashad Penny. I could see it working. You're not going to be the number one or the number two.
Yeah.
But you got Kenny McIntosh. What's going on with that young man? I wonder what this does for him. But welcome back. Again, you are not depending on Rashad Penny. That's why I'm okay with the situation. You got two backs here already.
Speaking of those two backs here, we are going to take a couple minutes coming up next to take stock of the Seahawks running back room. What's working? What's not? How can they be great? What might it look like under Ryan Grubb? Are there some intriguing options in the draft? It is all running back talk. And then we're going to talk about the most controversial story to come out of the VMAC yesterday. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Let's talk about a run game for the Seahawks. There are five games last season against Dallas, San Francisco, LA, Tennessee, and Baltimore, where Seattle's offense didn't rush for more than 75 yards. In four of those five games, they lost. It's not a coincidence. You need this run game for the offense to get going. And you have some good pieces, but let's take stock of where this running back room is right now. You had Ken Walker with a phenomenal rookie season, surpassing 1,000 yards. Offensive rookie of the year candidate ended up going to Garrett Wilson with the Jets. But still, I digress. Heading into his second season, a little less successful, but there were some reasons for that. You add Zach Charbonnet to the mix. Now you're maybe bringing back Rashad Penny. You got Kenny McIntosh, who's a question. DJ Dallas on the move, going to the Cardinals. Bump, how do you see the running back room right now in terms of personnel before we get to a conversation about offensive philosophy and where this might go and what happened last year?
I love it. You got two really good young running backs. Ken Walker, I think, has established himself as a 1,000-yard rusher if he can stay healthy every single year, at least in the short term. I think Zach Charbonnet has established himself as a good number two running back and has the capabilities of making some big plays back there. Different type of styles. I think Ken Walker is more elusive. Zach Charbonnet is more downhill. Both these guys can catch a football out the backfield. They did so in college at Michigan State for Ken Walker and at UCLA for Zach Charbonnet. I think you're in a good place. You the Seahawks are at their best when they have four horses in the stable, though. Over the years, you always have your 1-2 punch and then your guys who help out on special teams. And then your number four, who's been DJ Dallas over the past few years, who is now with Arizona Cardinals, mm-hmm. I believe. Yeah, I look at their running back room, and I'm okay with it. And I look at the way Grubb called plays for the University of Washington, and I go, don't sleep on the run game. Dylan Johnson had 20 carries against Oregon. He had 26 against then number 20 SC. He had 23 against then number 18 Utah, 16 against Oregon State, another 28 against Oregon State when they ran it back, and then 21 against Texas. You think of Grubb, you think of throwing the ball across the yard, as you should. Roma Dunze, McMillan, and Polk, Michael Penix will do that to you, but I'm anxious to see what he does with this run game because it sounds like it's going to be an emphasis.
Well, and obviously the reason that we're talking so much about the offensive line is that if you and I have a conversation about what happened last year, it's going to focus on the offensive line, not necessarily just the running backs. And I do want to point out, I said Ken Walker had a different season that was like less exciting. Part of that is also because he was a rookie and it was unexpected and it was really fun. And oh my God, great, he got over 1,000 yards. He still had 905 rushing yards last year, almost as many first downs, one less rushing touchdown. It was still a solid season, but that offensive line was so banged up. The team didn't get to the playoffs. The offense didn't feel as efficient. Geno wasn't as efficient. So that all kind of gets wrapped up and Ken Walker becomes part of it. But if we start talking about like what he needs moving forward, do you see, hey, Grubb is a great answer? Do you see, hey, drafting an offensive lineman is a great answer? Like how do we get the best version of Ken Walker?
You need health. 50 games last year, missed a couple of them things, but you need him to be healthy. You need that offensive line to be healthy, and you need to get better when it comes to talent with that offensive line. I saw that run game last year at times. You know, Stacey, back in our clubbing days, you know, Tia Luz and Amber and
all
that stuff.
You don't have to put me on blast like that.
It's okay. I'm older than you, so it's fine.
I definitely hit up Tia Luz like maybe once a month. And I definitely hit up Amber. And there were a couple of Copper Cart, all kinds of places.
Remember Time Out in Kirkland? You ever been to Time Out in Kirkland? It's a cool bar.
No, but let me tell
you,
what kids don't realize is 2009 to, I don't know if I was in 21. 2010, 11, 12 was popping.
Yeah, it was popping. So I look at the run game back in my clubbing days. Remember when the DJ's making that transition and you can kind of hear the next song that's coming? You're waiting for it to drop.
Yeah.
Boom,
and
drops. We're going, right? Sometimes a run game is you feel the transition, you're waiting for the beat to drop, and it never drops. And you're sitting there like, oh, come on, DJ, get that thing going.
I'm just laughing. Remember, I knew it was going to be Lollipop.
Right, this is it. So this. We need a smoother transition when it comes to this run game. We need to see Ken Walker gaining momentum. The beat is fire. We see the offensive linemen pancaking, getting to that second level. The transition is coming. Then, boom, we need that beat to drop and Ken Walker going nuts. We just need more of Ken Walker getting after. But it takes rhythm. It takes timing. It takes health. If all those things fall in line, and it takes talent, right? Yeah. Maybe in the draft, these veterans coming over. If you can put all those things together, there's no reason why Kenneth Walker doesn't go for 1,000 yards and Zach Charbonnet adds about 400 to 500 on it.
Watch this. But can Ryan Grubb be a good DJ? Here's what he had to say about transitioning from what he did at UW and who he wants to be as an offensive coordinator, as an offense with Seattle.
Yeah, I think, you know, over the course of my career, we've done both, certainly. I think, you know, when you look at what we did, probably more specifically at UW over the last two seasons, we were, you know, accentuating the positives. And there's three receivers that are probably going to get drafted this year. And so I think, you know, moving the football through the air was a logical choice. And we are going to be a physical team in Seattle. And over the years, that's something that we've certainly done when the components all matched up. You know, we ran the ball very effectively. And I look forward to it. I think that when you have an established run game, it makes calling those other plays and auxiliary plays off of it a lot easier, honestly. It's when you don't have the presence of a run game that things can get really tricky.
Bump, I would imagine every offensive coordinator, including yourself, laughs whenever anyone talks about the idea of like, but do you care about the run game? Because you're like, what do you mean do I care about the run game? Of course I care about the run game. It's an offense. You need that. Like, this isn't as simple as are you a running or passing offense? However, so much of Washington's story in 2023 was Michael Penix and was those wide receivers. And there is a reason that we are going to see one of those wide receivers go in the top 10 and may see Michael Penix go in the first round. I hope so for him. I am curious as to what Ryan Grubb's offense looks like with the run, because you don't have Michael Penix, at least not yet. You don't have Michael Penix in Seattle. You don't have, you know, all of those weapons. You don't have one of the best offensive lines in Seattle. So there is a challenge there in for Ryan Grubb to me.
Yeah. The run game is, in a fight, it's the jab. It's the jab. The jab sets up everything in fighting, right? It you find the range of your opponent. You see how he's going to react. That's exactly what the run game is. So no matter if you're a run team first or a passing first, you're going to throw jabs. You're going to see what that run game can do, and it also keeps a defense, holds them accountable, and keeps them honest. There's no team that says, we're just not going to run the football. We're going to throw it. This isn't 7-on-7. This isn't high school football where you're just better on the outside and your guy's just going to win every single rep. But how many jabs are they going to throw? You look at the rush attempts for the Seahawks last year. Where do you think they rank when it comes to rush attempts?
25.
Second to last.
Dang it.
382 attempts.
Too optimistic.
You know who is right beneath them? The Washington Commanders. Doesn't surprise you because Sam Howell threw the ball 612 times. More jabs need to be thrown. What determines the jabs that you throw? I think it's the health and the success of the run game. But there's no way Grubb is going to ignore the run. He understands that UW was at their best when Dylan Johnson got going, and now you can open things up and be versatile. It's all about versatility. Grubb understands that, and you have the dogs in the backfield to do it. It's about the cohesiveness of those five guys up front. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to play a lot into it. And then, where's Geno at? How's DK performing? How's Lockett performing? You can go in with a plan, but once you get hit in the mouth a couple times and Mike Tyson says, look, everyone has a plan to get punched in the mouth, then you can figure some things out. So going into each game, I expect him to try to establish the run. There will be games where they're more pass-heavy than run-heavy. But to say, you know, is the run important? I think it's so silly. In every single level, you have to be able to run the football.
Let's take one final minute to talk about whether or not you'd add. It's not an exceptional running back class. There's no Bijan Robinson this year. There is a Blake Corum who could go, is expected to go on day two, depending on how early, yet to be seen. Trey Benson out of Florida State. You got Jonathan Brooks out of Texas. I mean, are you comfortable with the personnel they have where it's like, throw in a guy for depth late? Or do you think that they need the two or three of the 1-2 punch?
Nah, you're good. You got a 1-2 punch. You're going to add a running back. That's what you do every single drive, especially here in Seattle. If there's a few positions where I'm okay, there's no urgency there, it's there. It's the running back. It's just make sure these guys are healthy. Mm-hmm. Bring in a Rashad Penny if need be. Make sure you have four guys in the stable. But your 1-2 punch, I think, could be one of the best in the league if they stay healthy.
I need to go top off this coffee. We're going to take a couple minutes, but we're not going anywhere. We're going to be coming back. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some controversy surrounding a decision Mike McDonald made yesterday. But is he really wrong? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Some controversy brewing at VMAC. It was revealed via couple reports from Brady Henderson, then also quotes from players, that Mike McDonald took down the pictures that were hanging up in the hallways at VMAC commemorating the Pete Carroll era. So the tip from the NFC Championship game against San Francisco, some Super Bowl stuff. I'm not going to keep explaining it. I mean, you can take a listen to what Leonard Williams had to say about what he saw.
And I remember the first day we came into the team meeting, Mike pointed out that, you know, there's empty walls in the hallways and things like that. And, you know, for a person like me, I think that made me really excited. And I hope it made the rest of the guys excited because, you know, we're obviously going to respect tradition and the history of the Seahawks. But I think it's given us like a clean foundation to like create whatever we want to be. We're not chasing to like be like any other team that's been here before. We want to create our own identity.
He said he's excited to create his own identity as a team and not have the pressure of trying to chase anything, seemingly anything that's been done before. I have a take on this that I worry is riding the fence, but I feel so strongly about it. But tell me how you feel about it.
No, I want to hear your take.
You want to hear what I think?
Yeah,
okay,
my take is this.
I'm a SeaTac native, but I grew up here. And there has not been a ton of success in the teams that I've rooted for. The Mariners are the only MLB franchise to never go to a World Series. The Seahawks have won one Super Bowl and been to three. The other two losses were devastating. I remember watching them, one as a child. And I know that having a championship to celebrate means a ton to Seattle fans, mm-hmm. and there are so few that we've collectively had. And yes, Sounders fans, and yes, Storm fans, before you say anything, I am in this case talking about like the major men's leagues, and I don't mean to, but I think that when people look at Boston and they're envious of their success, they're looking at the Bruins, they're looking at the Celtics, they're looking at the Patriots.
Yeah.
So it means a ton, and that was a really great era of Seahawks football. I also am a passive aggressive person and a people pleaser, and I would not have taken down pictures because there's all kinds of history there, right? There's a big wall that they have at VMAC where they have the signatures of every player that's ever been through up on these boards. Like, that's the team for that year, and those are all
they
the signatures.
They better not take that down.
No. But I'm saying there are many things at VMAC that have nothing to do with the Carroll era and everything to do with the organization's history. It's the same thing when you walk into Lumen Field and you walk down to the press box and there's a big picture of Chuck Knox and Cortez Kennedy and all this. However, if I were watching a movie and it was about a team I didn't care about and this team had won a championship 10 plus years ago and a new coach came in and the players show up in this movie and they're looking around, they're like, the walls are blank, they're like, what's going on? They go and they flood into the auditorium and they take their seats and the coach, played by Ryan Gosling or whoever, some kind of young guy that, like, you know, he's kind of the protagonist and you're like, well, what's he going to do here? He's got something to prove. He steps up and he goes, we're going to put our own pictures up. I'd be like, okay, I get it. It's a metaphor. If my team was unconnected in any way and I was watching this happen in a movie, I would completely understand the decision and the analogy and the metaphor that he's using for, like, we're going to earn our pictures on this wall.
Yeah.
So I get it.
I get it. The only thing I question is, do you think the Patriots are going to take down everything that they did, the six Super Bowl championships? Do you think there are going to be no pictures of Tom Brady and the success that they had? Do you think the Niners, when you walk in their facility, don't have pictures of Bill Walsh and Joe Montana and everything that's going down? Do you think the Steelers don't have pictures of Terry Bradshaw and those great teams over there? Those are probably still up. But I think the reason why those are still up is because it was such a sustained success. Mm-hmm. Like, the Niners just didn't win one. They won five of them things. The Steelers just didn't win one. They won five. New England, they won six. So I can see both sides of this thing. Like, for example, my wife still has pictures of, like, her ex-boyfriend and stuff, like, in a box somewhere.
I was going to say, hanging up
in
your home?
No, not hanging up. Come on now. Like, in a box somewhere, you know?
Up on the wall?
And my kids are like, Dad, you're not mad at that? I go, no, I got a box, like, full of all my old stuff.
Part of her history.
It's still
and your
something
history.
That happened, right? That was a part of your life. So you don't want to ignore it, but you also want to put it away and say, I'm moving on. So I think there should be, I hope the Super Bowl banner is still in the indoor practice facility. I hope they didn't take that down.
Right.
I hope that there are still pictures of the Lombardi Trophy. But I'm not against McDonald's saying, look, this is my spot now.
Yeah.
Okay, this is your spot now. We got a new lease on the building. All right. I think Mike McDonald's lease is like 3 or 4 years at this point. We'll see. They renew that lease. You guys got a lease. A bunch of y'all got a one-year lease. We just signed you one-year contracts. Let's decorate this place the way we want to decorate it. So how do you do that? You win ball games and you try to reach an excellence. Not saying you can reach the excellence of that 2013, 2014 because I was on some other you know what. But it's up to you to write your own legacy now. I hope that there's at least something in that facility about that really that reminds you of that Super Bowl team, because that is part of the Seahawks history.
We'll check next week. We're there Thursday. We'll do a spy mission.
Yeah,
and walk around VMAC.
Yeah, I'm not mad at him. It makes complete sense, man. You clean it up, and you know, as a season goes along, as DK makes a play, throw a pitcher up.
Right.
As Geno has another game winning drive, throw a pitcher up. You start to collect your own memories and throw them up there. You can't completely get rid of that Super Bowl championship, though.
My guess, I have not been out to the facility since, like, the end of last season. So my guess is that it is in the main hallway by the indoor practice facility and then heading to the locker room. There's not a ton of real estate there. That's where I guess it is. And my guess is it's, like, five photos. Big, big photos. I don't see what's wrong with saying I'm making room for ours. And also, here's the thing, too. I always think back to what Michael Bennett always says, and especially that time that he was on our show when he was like, let us go. And by that, he doesn't mean don't celebrate everything that the Seahawks in 2013 accomplished.
Yeah.
What he means is do something new, do something special. No one on this team is from 2013. No one's left.
All gone.
So for Mike McDonald, you have a new head coach. You have a new coaching staff. The only thing lingering is some people behind the scenes, you know, the PR team, the GM. Everyone else is new. None of these players were part of that team. All of them were kids. What's wrong with Mike McDonald coming in here saying, we need to create our own legacy? Do you want a head coach to come in and say, yeah, I love what they did so much 10 years ago when I was in my 20s that, you know, I'm just going to kind of carbon copy that.
Yeah. No.
No, you want someone to say, if you want a picture on this wall, then earn it.
Yeah.
You didn't do what Richard Sherman did. What have you done, Reek Mullen?
With that.
What have you done, Devin?
Make your own
play.
What
have you done? Exactly.
What's your big play?
Yeah,
you make
so,
that.
Yeah, so, again, I understand. It's not what I would have done. I understand it. I get it. And I'm kind of, if it was happening in a movie, I'd be behind it. And Curtis and I were talking before the show started about how even sometimes people in the building have hung on to that. Like, I remember after they lost in the divisional round to the Carolina Panthers on the road, they came back. It was locker clean out. I was interviewing guys and everyone was, oh, it's just like 2012. That sentiment never left. Every year after that, you know, it just kind of feels like 2012 again, to be honest. You got to let it go. Find something new. Like, find new success, because the way that you'd been trying to do it for so long, you hadn't been back to an NFC Championship game.
This is, I think, is the start of this team. I think this is, it feels like 2012 all over again. And y'all can, I don't want to talk about that game. You can go back and figure it out. But this was so similar.
Guess the year when that was said.
I could not tell you. I'm going to say 2016. 15.
18.
15.
Sooner. 2020.
So again, I just because I wouldn't have done it and just because, you know, I loved that era of Seahawks football so much, I get why a competitive head coach would say, make your own story.
Yeah. My bad. Steelers got six.
Good. Steelers
you
got
win the
six,
Zippo.
Bro.
We won, you know nothing about
sun.
Football. Go back to college. all right, you guys, we are going to stick with the Seahawks. We have a pretty Seahawks-heavy show, but we still have lots of great Mariners stuff to get to. Ryan Roland-Smith is going to join us at noon. We are going to stick with football, though. Seattle Times reporter Bob Condotta joining us next to talk draft, and we'll ask him about what he thinks about what Mike McDonald's done so far with the culture. Don't go anywhere.